Well, Michael and I would like to welcome you back to another recording of the Saturn Earth Connection. Our website is helloearth.info, and today is Tuesday, February 28th, 2017, the very last day of February. This is our 342 with Michael from Maui, Hawaii. Michael was taken to a huge luminescent sphere near Saturn as a student visitor and returned to Maui with their amazing flowing dialogue, and occasionally we hear from Shaharon using Michael to transmit his voice into the recording. Before we get started, I want to just say to James in North Wales, Pennsylvania, thank you very much. He sends a check to Historicity Productions, 91 River Road, Stockton, New Jersey, 08559, automatically for $20, which pays to host... pays my Tierra Net bill, and they host us, and Tierra Net is letting, you know, or actually using more megabyte than what I'm paying for, and thank you, Tierra Net, Tierra Net, TIERRA.net. So thanks, Tierra Net, and James in North Wales. Hello, Michael.
Hello, Curtis.
There you are in Maui, somewhere I knew where, but somewhere in Maui.
Yeah, it's Maui, Wailuku, Maui.
Wailuku, Maui.
Wailuku, Maui.
Yeah. Cute little town. Cute little town right next to the mountains. And right next, next to the ocean, close to the ocean.
Yeah, I guess so. It's not quite in the back door, like, you know, it's people over here, they build places right on the beach, you know. Mm-hmm. Wonder why everything washes away one day. Mm-hmm. A little risky, but they, you know, that's what they dream about. And I see so many people trying to live their dreams by walking on the sand, you know, getting the sand. And sometimes, you know, not the most comfortable thing to walk in the sand. Yeah. So, but that's their dream. So
it's a workout.
It is. You know, his feet sink into the sand and it gets hard to walk.
It's hard to walk.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's the hot.
Yeah. Your feet get burnt, yeah.
Hot so, sand, yep.
Yeah, so we are kind of a special human being. This is the planet 606 of Titania, called Urantia. And an interesting factor about Urantia, the bestowal of the Creator Son, Michael, Christ Michael, Jesus, we know him as Jesus Christ, and happened here on Earth. But once that happens, once the final bestowal is done, which is the incarnation of becoming human, something happens. And it's very interesting. Something that people don't really realize. They wonder and they claim we're such a terrible race of beings. They have some, you know, we've got so many flaws. Yet, we have free will. I mean, real free will. And because of that, we have, you know, we claw at and try to get to something reasonably stable, and then the more we do that, we end up becoming very, you might say, arrogant or very dangerous, you know. But what has happened, and what has happened to the human race and the development of humans in this universe, the entire universe, millions and millions of sentient planets, where people live, where, you know, mortal people, Guess what happened, Curtis?
Guess what happened, did you say?
Yeah, guess what happened after the bestowal of Jesus Christ 2,000 years ago and his final ascent to become a master son, not just a creator son, but a master son, which means he has been given, you know, all power in heaven and on earth, extreme authority. What follows that is that there's still more development of the mortal of the realm. The mortals are now capped. You might say they've come to a point where there can be no more experimentation. And that means that we are the final creation of mortals that were created for the ascent process. You know, the ascent process is a process like graduating from one domain to another domain, or one point in one's life career to another, the next point in a, you know, life career. And that is what we're all about, and what, I took up the challenge of, you know, going out one night and calling on God to make himself real. And he ended up sending an emissary, someone who would help guide me to find the purpose of life. But after discovering the purpose of life, which is to ascend and to become a being of, you might say, eternal destiny, having an eternal life, it also kept the human race from development. In other words, we are the highest developed race of humans in the universe. You may not have the greatest mental capacity, or, you know, the biggest brain or whatever it is, but we have something that has been capped. No more experimentations are allowed. So people think that, oh, we've reached the totality, the final, haven't reached the totality. We've got so much more evolution to go through. And that may be true, but there is no other race other than the human race that has that potential remaining. We are the final product of the universe. And that is kind of a hard thing to swallow when you think of the, I guess, the number of planets out there that have life. And life that is, you know, developed to a very high extent, and civilizations that are developed to a point of absolutely, you know, perhaps nearly divine in their structure, gone into technology is far beyond what we can even imagine. Yet, here we are at the capstone of it. And this is a kind of a thing. Why would there have to be a capstone? Would it have to be the final product of development of mortal creation? The reason for that is they have essentially the seed to actually populate the rest of the universe, which is continuing on and growing at a tremendous rate. But yet they needed very, you know, you might say tough and durable seed, potential of life, everlasting, and divinity those that have that potential of divinity attainment. And that is what we are. We're that final capstone. And wow, that's an amazing thing, you know. And it was capped because the Creator Son himself, the universe creator, became a human being. And that sufficed because the universe creator and his whole divinity could be contained within the human structure. Or to be, you might say, integrated into the divine matrices, the reality of the totality of divinity. And we are that. We have that potentiality which makes us the final product, but we've got to grow into it. But it's according to our destiny, the mortal life develops tremendous character and strength for the overcoming the obstacles that are ahead of us. And developing also the true loyalty to the divine nature. Once finding it in becoming a dedicated, you might say, soldier of it, fighting the good fight of faith, you might call it, is the ideal of becoming a living generator of life experience, having living faith in God. And that is, the universe may have other planets with much higher developed technologies. They have technologies that can, make our stuff look pretty primitive, but our stuff is accelerating at such a high rate of development that it is very close to what is operational in the New Jerusalem, the planet, or that architectural sphere that is orbiting Saturn. And that, we've got, soon we'll be having much of those things, like the Dano told me, don't worry about the technology here. Much of what you see here will be on Earth. It will be there. You will live to see it. And that's true. I have lived to see much of the high-technology that I experienced in the New Jerusalem appear here on our planet. And one of them is our smartphones, our instruments of communication and information. It's one of the most powerful tools. And it's going to only get better. But there are other things also that we'll be catching up into. And the technology is not the problem. The problem was with the universe creatures was that some of the creatures were failing the destiny climb. They didn't make the destiny climb. They stopped or they could not progress very far. And it was for one reason or another strange. So the human race was developed under a more wild nature and a tougher nature not so ordered and comfortable. And as a result, we have a very durable and flexible character to our being. So much like I think oftentimes what was portrayed in the early TV shows of Star Trek was true, that it would show that Captain Kirk's base human nature would overcome some higher developed species with having a tremendous intelligence or something, or having more higher technologies, and somehow because of that be able to overcome them. And this is very interesting, but it turns out quite true, because we as the human race on Urantia are the final product. We may evolve a little bit higher. We are the final product. No more experimentation goes on. So the, you might say the prototype of all the rest of the universe population will be humans.
What kind of experiments were going on before this took place? You said we're the final product.
The final human product, yeah.
Final human product.
Yeah. There are many different kinds that were developed out of different base mammalian as well as reptilian creatures. And some of them, we came out of the prior to the monkeys, the lemurs kind of are the root of our origin. But there are others that use different species of animals, like perhaps a cat or an elephant, or being the base by which, you know, humanoid was developed upon. But there are others which would depend upon the environment of the planet. There will be, you know, an aquatic creature or this or that. But they have all been developed already, and they are able to be used in their proper environment. And not to say that the human race will be the only thing around. All the other developed, you might say, living technologies, whether they be, you know, an aquatic creature or a, would be the challenging one is, what would a non-breathing creature look like? You know, we can breathe here, and we can become average in the atmosphere, but yet we're the final product. So there was something that had to be accomplished in the last experimentation of the human race, and that was the ability to interface to the divine nature, and that some of the others may have struggled with. That's where we are, you know. You won't see, you know, there's this terror that aliens are coming around and they want to experiment on us. Actually, they want to know why that we are the caps of the top. They don't seem to be, you know, any smarter than us. They don't seem to, you know, have, you know, what is this thing that, you know, makes them so special? And the problem is that many of them cannot interface with the thought adjuster, the divine fractal, the divine fragment. And they have no ability to do that because of an overdeveloped intellect or a rejection of certain characteristics of the nature that is considered divine. And because of that, they cannot interface well with a divine nature. And that may be because of their prototype, where they came from, where they, you know, as a higher developed being, they were a bird of a certain kind of nature that could only get so far, and for that bird creature you could develop only so much. So there are other many mortal beings, and of course, if you know famously of the mortal beings that are gray alien types, they're very common, but even they are not of the highest caliber. We actually are superior to them in one facet or another. but we are able to interface with the most amount, you might say, with the best to be used in multiple situations, the most versatile in a sense, and can grow become very versatile. And this is something that's recently I discovered, and I realized it was something that I was being pointed toward, but I couldn't believe it. I thought, no, not our race. But it is. We can think of a lot of things that can say we shouldn't be that way. We shouldn't be at the top of the pyramid of creatures created, because you know, you think about just the idea that you have a UFO craft, you know, that flies around and is a, you know, basically something like a nuts and bolts craft, you know, that was created. That's technology that is, you know, so far ahead, but that makes the people who made it superior to us. Well, not according to the divine, not according to the creator's himself. Yeah. He didn't choose the lowest of all to become the highest of all by accident. He purposely did it, recognizing what characteristics he wanted.
Could you say that again or explain better? You said about making flying saucers or making spacecraft. I mean, we make spacecraft. Human beings make spacecraft.
Yes.
But they're not interplanetary spacecraft. They just are local spacecraft.
Yeah. Basically, we are still strapping ourselves to the limitations of what is closely, you know, aligned with us, which is our dimensional plane, you know. Because of that, you know, it's essentially similar to using a, you know, a dugout canoe in terms of travel, compared to what we have today in the newest jet planes, you know, newest passenger jets. Quite a big difference in capacity as well as where it can go. But it's the same people that did it. That's the idea. It's the same human race that made the dugout canoe, or also made the highest, best jet, passenger jets to carry lots and lots of people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's the same people. Are we any different? Some people might say, oh, no, we've got better brains, you know, we've evolved higher than the ancient, you know, caveman or the guys who first voyaged, decided to float on a log and go in the middle of a lake and catch fish or something. Not quite. That same capacity. What made that interesting to me was that the capacity, the intellectual capacity, much of what the Dana was telling me, don't worry about the technology, it will come, it'll be given. So here it is, one of the highest capacities is the interface of inspiration. And the way Nikola Tesla got inspired and was able to bring electricity to electrify the planet much at a higher level than what Thomas Edison had, you know, the basic DC and AC war that went about. But the fact that Tesla understood oscillations much better and the advantage of oscillations. He also understood that the entire, you know, reality is made up of oscillations, vibrations. The idea of how he came about this understanding was that it was you know, some people might say, you know, a resident knowledge in his divine nature, or a imputed, given. Talked about George Washington Carver and how he would talk to the flowers at that time at night, very early in the morning, like 4 a.m. in the morning. He would talk to the flowers, but in talking to the flowers, he was really gaining divine inspiration. That divine inspiration is something no other animal has, only the human race has, which makes it capable of anything. The human race can be inspired by God.
Your microphone is slipping away or moving away.
Yeah, it can be inspired by God. So that inspiration is so essential. It sets, you might say, the human race, not as a solitary, you know, what would you rather have? A powerful desktop computer that is not connected to, you might call it, the cloud or the others, higher information that we can gather through networking or data. We can gather information through the internet that is stored on a tremendous amount of servers. Or we could have a single desktop unit and we'd have to collect information one by one and sort of like use them one at a time. I think it's much more powerful to have a connection back into the internet. And that's what maybe one of the great factors about what I was basically taught about who we are as human beings. That we have that connection to, you might say, the divine internet, which is, you know, it's not the communication circuitry of, you know, Satania. They had a very functional network of information, and it was functioning very well, but it had to be turned down because of the Luciferian rebellion. But what couldn't be turned down was the divine interface, the very interface that allowed the universe creator to take form in the body of a human being, which says how the dimension was sufficient in capacity for such a thing to take place. That's an amazing thing.
To take form of a human race?
In within a human being.
Within a human being.
Yeah. And become a functional human being, plus at the very same time being the Creator's Son, developing progressively to its fullness through life.
So this is basically for 2,000 years.
Since he left, he you might say, gave that, you might say, the personality of his character in the spirit of truth, which made it much easier for a human being to experience the divine nature and later become the divine nature. And like I said, there are other creatures that have rejected some of the divine nature simply because of their construct, so they couldn't become where we're at. So, And that may be the reason they're trying feverishly to save their destiny by trying to steal a part of ours.
Who's trying to steal a part of ours?
Some other alien.
Lucifer's?
There's a whole mess of them. The story goes this way. It really amounts to this. It's when I went to Cambodia, my lesson there was in the Pol Pot regime, the absolute awful, evil Pol Pot regime. Mm-hmm. And they were the Khmer Rouge, the red one, the red regime, the Khmer Rouge. And they did awful things, little baby happened to be born into whose parents were scientists or taught high school physics or something. Things like that, they were educated. They get their kid. They said, we have to send them to school. The little kids, really small, maybe up to 2 years old or three. They grab them by the ankles, take them to this tree, and start whipping the kid onto the tree and killing them that way. They'd pick them up by their ankles and beat them against the tree. I was standing right in front of the tree that happened. And the guy told me, look down under your feet. And I saw the dirt, but mixed into the dirt was little white specks. And he says, what you're looking at is the little innocent baby bones of their skulls.
My gosh.
Mixed into the dirt. There was also little pieces of t-shirt material mixed in. Then I asked them something interesting. I asked them, what happened to the people who did such an awful thing? And he said, well, could be that guy across the street cutting that grass over there, or pointing down another place and said, could be that other person over there walking down there. The only thing that could tell you that it could possibly be anyone like that would be their age. But you can't tell them apart. In a very similar sense, the Lucifer Rebellion did find a whole bunch of fallen angels, but many of them are running around loose. Yeah, still running around loose.
The fallen angels.
Yeah. Some of them get put on report because they start interfering with our destiny. And if they do, and we are astute enough, we can put them on report. And when we put them on report, then those who can put them on report usually have a destiny guardian assigned to their life experience, their life. And that guardian of destiny, you might say, brings in the authorities. And that's how they're rounded up. But their meaning is still running around, causing havoc. Look at our planet. They got confused people that have mixed up that God needs favors, like killing the infidel. Problem is they don't know what the infidel is. So anyway, these are the kinds of confusions that there are in the planet, but it does not say that if a human truly wants to interface with the divine and find, you might say, God, find truth, they will be inhibited. No, it says they will not be inhibited from finding it. They will find it. But if they make up their own rules to find it and play it out, this is where the confusion comes in, because it is an error and that error can be played to disastrous proportions.
Well, it seems like a lot of humans have this error built into them.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that causes that is cultural security. And that security that they want and build upon, that you might say allows them to feel secure in their eternal destiny. And they cannot get over the fact that we were essentially meant eternal life, were built and structured for it. And that it is, you might say, something that we gotta prove out or earn. It is something that is given to us for free. But if we screw up by, you know, presumptively acting upon what we think, you might say, God wants, then it can be tremendous error. But what pulls a person away from such error is, you might call it, the absolute compass of one's soul, their interface to the divine destiny. Otherwise, people could be brainwashed easy. Wouldn't take a series of very different, very complicated ways of getting a person to believe it, but they play upon this one weakness of the human nature, which is you don't get something for nothing. You know, you don't find a place in heaven for nothing. You got to do something for it. Turns out to be extremely wrong, because that's where we're essentially like a seed does. If you have a plant and you want to plant, let's say, a rose bush or something, that let's not use a rose bush. It comes from cuttings many times. But let's look at a crop and a seed that needs to germinate. And you say, wow, that seed needs to germinate to become the crop, to be harvested. And when it germinates, it doesn't know that it's, you know, supposed to germinate. It just does it. It just happens. Much in the same way, when the conditions are correct, the discovery of the divine voice becomes apparent. It becomes one that can be interfaced with successfully by the humans. But what interferes with it is the confusion that brings to bear, you might say, the weapons of confusion. And those are built upon concepts that the human nature relies upon. And that would be like earning a position, a favored position. And how to do that would be to do something for. And it would be like doing something for God. Big mistake.
A big mistake?
Yeah. Doing something for God to gain position is exactly the wrong thing. You know. And that is the way that they are being confused and deceived as far as the human race goes. Wonder how, you know, a sentient and a race of beings of potential high destiny can make such a terribly erroneous action.
Michael, give me an example of doing something for God that would be a mistake.
Well, the suicide bomber that says, I have got to kill the infidel, And by doing so, I have accomplished God's will to kill the infidel, because the infidel need to be killed according to what they learned. And turns out to be a big, powerful part of our human nature to do self-sacrifice. But a big mistake in terms of thinking that God would require such a big action like that.
Well, how about the kamikaze pilots who were giving their life for the emperor?
Mm-hmm. Self-sacrifice, again, is part, it was part of this characteristic. Said one of the things concerning the ideal of self-sacrifice was to save family. A very precious vehicle for life, and higher developed life requires a family. So the preservation of that family structure was something that was incorporated in such need, doing, protecting the homeland, protecting. But the confusion that happens with the other ones who are not in a protective mode, they're looking at it from the mode that says, I've got to blow up the infidel because that is what I have to do to win God's favor.
Move a little closer to that microphone.
Yeah, well, this is all the paper right now.
Uh-oh, a lot of...
Yeah.
Okay.
So all I can do to win God's favor is, have to do something, and this grand thing would be like killing people. It's very, very wrong. I gotta go beat kids' heads into the tree, kill them, because want to get rid of them. But they were being done for political reasons in Pol Pot's regime. Man's inhumanity to man. This is one of the things, I talk about this because when I went into the hall of the Shahuruns, the Destiny Guardians, they had all of these images in playing on the walls of their temple, you might call it. And they were showing that. They were showing humans in humanity to humans. And how sorry they were that that was happening. It almost looked like they were blaming themselves for it. But that is one of the areas of tremendous weakness, and it's a sorrowful part of what we're going through right now in terms of the radical Islamic terrorist activity. And many of them have diverted their purpose to, again, preserving family, like giving their families a better life. That cannot be true, but they do have a very perverted way of thinking about it. So that's what is one of the examples.
Mm-hmm.
The example of the kamikaze who sacrifices, essentially like a protective action to the homeland. At the time, they knew they were losing the war. And they had the full, Japan had the full feeling that they were going to be wiped off the face of the earth. Turned out, when they met the enlightened race of humans, they found them very different. They found the GIs, the Americans coming in, enlightened race, the one whose money says in God we trust, that race of people. They didn't destroy them. They didn't completely do what they had feared. It's quite the opposite. And what has come out of that is our present relationship with Japan today, which is one of friendship. Anyway, that's just a story of, you know, what we've walked through somewhat. It shouldn't be forbidding.
So this is the living faith in God?
Yeah, it is. That living faith in God made the difference. They were so surprised of this people that came over and take them in prison. And they kind of went and taught them a new way. And it didn't destroy the faith. See, the faith that was built into the Japan people was faith that was basically Buddhist, which is an extremely peaceful religion. But industrialization and the concept of conquest, world power and conquest, had gotten into the way of developing destiny on their point of view. And war was what happened. But they were surprised after, you know, receiving the blow, the wake-up call, the nuclear bomb, that the ways of war had ended that they had known. But it ended in a different way. It ended in a way that showed brotherhood. It showed them something very strange. And now has become something we want to share with the rest of the world. But then there's the confusion that has come up because of Islam and its radical religious meanings. More than leanings, actual strict indoctrination and brainwashing. You know, it's caused a lot of disharmony. The planet will go through this. But out of it all, we'll be able to reach forward in and, you might say, grasp the very nature that is divine, that will make possible the greatest ever time of development and of the human race ever to see the face of this planet. And it's just ahead of us. The universe, as we know it, we know it right now, is very limited and small, generally in human consciousness. And there may be a chance for life outside the planet, but not in the dimensions that are really out there. We will work out our problems as we gain an ability to interface and get guidance. Part of the reason this is happening, this Hello Earth recordings come about is to get people ready to hear, or when get the students ready, because the age of the teacher sons are just around the corner. And I've already actually begun in an indirect sense through experiences such as myself and others. And those are the ways in which the teacher sons begin to break in to help direct the destiny of this planet to fulfill its absolute purpose, which is to be the launching pad of sentient divine nature throughout the universe. Much of it is not populated right now.
What do you mean by it's not populated right now? I didn't get that. I don't understand.
Well, when we studied astronomy, we noticed that the universe seems to go on and on, even in the darkest spots where we look and wonder there should be nothing there, and it turns out there's nothing but more and more galaxies. And the number of galaxies seems to be so large that it's almost infinite in number and stars. Number of galaxies, number of stars, just goes on and on. But what the Iranchi book talks about is these outer space levels. Areas which have not yet been, I'd say, populated. And that is one of the purposes, if not the purpose, for the human race, to go out and populate these worlds that are being made ready or are already ready for the, it's not like you're going to have to develop life. It's already around. So they're going to just end up populating many planets throughout the universe of unpopulated worlds, worlds that are not ready yet. They'll be made ready.
Doesn't sound like we're really ready. I mean, we're still close to our planet. We have barely gone to the moon, if we ever went there. Elon Musk, he wants to go to Mars. I was just asking you that question. You know, why would he want to go to Mars? There's not even a resort there that he can go to and, lounge around at the pool and just live in a total another environment.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's why people go to resorts. They live in the north and they fly to a warmer climate and enjoy something they don't have where they usually live. Well, if anyone can tell me why Elon Musk wants to go to Mars, please send me a note. Tell me an email why he would want to go to Mars. Once you're there, you say, okay, now time to go home because there's nothing there. Or maybe there is something there.
Yeah.
And as far as populating other worlds, that is just so far away from our lifetimes. I mean, like you said, from a birch bark canoe or a dugout canoe to big jets. Well, we've only been in the air flying ourselves for 13, 14 years.
Mm-hmm.
And it's only been since the late 50s that we had jets. that where we can travel further and faster. And, well, we can travel pretty far, pretty fast and far with spacecraft, but we still stay close to home, close to Earth.
Mm-hmm. Well, it just tells you that our destiny is way in front of us. And it's something that we're supposed to try to comprehend, that so that we can truly experience and live life to the extent where it enriches us in our life experience, builds our nature, character, because that is preserved. And that part which is preserved and worthwhile will be preserved and essentially go on to higher destinies. You know that one of the highest destinies, angelic or beings of high order, spiritual high order, mighty messenger or things like that, they are of mortal origin. They had a beginning which was like you and I live and have successfully been able to bring forward their destiny through many, many trials, many, many things that develop step by step. And that's what we look forward to. That's one of the statements is that Christ tried to teach. He said, put your treasures in heaven, so where your treasure is, your heart will be also. So the great treasure that we have is what I'm trying to paint. This whole picture was about the treasure that we really have. First of all, in our destiny, on who we are as the original beings, as the final product for the, you might say, the launching pad of high destiny beings. And that is the hopeful thought, the hopeful life experience ahead of us. One of the things that makes a person free is the ability to roam the universe. Right now, Elon Musk wants to go to Mars because he has supreme wanderlust. He has the supreme wanderlust, the high order of wanting to be someplace different, experience something that was not experienced. This is one of the characteristics built into our nature. That's the reason we like to travel. We like to look around, go different places, talk to different people. Although they may not be some people that we think would be there, maybe Elon Musk feels that there are people there. So, who knows? The idea is that that is something that is in the destiny for every human being as they walk forward to their higher destiny goals.
Well, Elon Musk, and back into 1100 years, we're still using rocketry, just like rocket candles or just rocketry there. Mm-hmm. For us to get to another planet, we just can't get there with rockets. Mm-hmm. It would take too long. Mm-hmm. There's just so many spacecraft coming to this planet in the last 60 years, since 1947, it seems they're just... Well, since 1947 is when it really became newsworthy. I mean, it was newsworthy before, but they didn't have the communication we have now. But still, we're still dealing with rockets. We need to have a true spacecraft that we could go interplanetary with. And, you know, for humans to go from a dugout canoe to a jet wasn't that much of a jump.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think? Do you think that that was a big jump?
Go from what?
From a canoe, which is traveling, you know, down a river or the inner island, they would travel with canoes.
It wasn't much of a jump when you think of the destiny, when you think of the time period. It's so small.
It is small.
You know, so it tells you something about our nature and what we can do. Once we find resources, every time we find something new to use, to be able to, you know, now we're working in nanobits, and then we're also moving into the quantum world, quantum realities. And these things are already being used. We already have electronics that can interface into the spin of, I think it was a, I forgot what element is being used right now for that spintronic type electronics. But there's an interface into also the nano quantum reality, and being able to interface that into our present electronics. And of course, our electronics would be superimposed into high level computing, quantum computing. These things are just beyond comprehension almost, the dimensions in which it'll be taken. But we may be able to see it, we may not be able to comprehend it, just like, I remember years ago being challenged this, the idea of the smartphone to come to reality, something like that. And I said, it will be real. And sure enough.
Well, that became real, and it was a big jump in technology. But, for instance, like the automobile, it's still the same as it was when it was first developed. Internal combustion engine. Then we had an automatic transmission, thanks to Nikola Tesla, and a radio, and air conditioning, and windshield wipers, and a roof, and nice, comfortable heated seats, comfort inside. But it's still the same vehicle. It hasn't changed.
That's the idea. If you, it's not broke, don't fix it. So
We can't seem to jump ahead to the next level of travel to other planets, even to our moon or to Mars and back or some other planets. Or
it's because of your perspective right now.
Do you see that the spacecraft that NASA's building to go to the surface of the sun? Oh.
No.
Surface of the sun. That was very interesting. That was on the Drudge Report just a day or two ago. And go to the surface of the sun. Oh, I thought the surface of the sun was some big fireball in the sky. But now they're letting it out of the bag, or giving up the big secret that it is not a fireball in the sky. But still, that's still rocketry to get there. When I was a kid, I just thought, boy, cars are just going to get so amazing in the years ahead. And what a big disappointment. I mean, when I was a kid, they had cars that were made of different colors beside black, but they just haven't changed. Seems like we need a big boost or a big hint of discovery from maybe Chaharon. They had that spacecraft on the moon that was that shape of the V-wing with those spheres over the wings and over the fuselage. But it seems like we need something to give us a boost, some more than what humanity can come up with. We can only improve upon what we have, but we can't go to the next level, which would be really, really wonderful in our lifetime. But
if you were to look at the factors that are involved in such a thing, that is, who really is controlling planetary destiny, and that has a lot to do if information is going to be propagated, given out. And right now we're undergoing a type of transition, a paradigm shift, and that will unleash truly unleash the inspired, and it will result in what you're asking for. So that is something that has been held back primarily for profit. Uh-huh. And, you know, but it will find its way to the surface of, you might say, living truth, so that we can actually use and see the higher technologies you're talking about in our lifetime. A new improved car, the Tesla's, Elon Musk, Tesla car is an example of a generation turning around to get energy and use it in a way that we know how to use it. But there may be ways that will become more apparent, and more economical, that being developed right now, or have been developed and have been repressed.
Electric cars are wonderful, but when we didn't have an electric starter without having to crank the engine over, which could, I hear, break. I've never cranked an engine over. I've always had an electric starter. I've kick-started the engines with a transmission that had a clutch. You could pop the clutch in second gear and turn the engine over. But the electric car, there were electric cars. Women liked the electric car. First, they didn't smell. They didn't have that terrible smell. And you didn't have to start them. You could just go. Just turn it on and go. And there were electric cars in New York City up until the 50s. So it's terrific the electric car has come of age again. But they kept that suppressed to make money with oil. And but there just is a spark of ingenuity that human beings just haven't, either we haven't come up with, or we have and they've just been suppressed. Well, this president, Donald Trump, is hopefully going to open a lot of doors and maybe get some of this technology out so we can use it. Would be good for all of us. But maybe we need someone like Shaharon to introduce us to a spacecraft. Remember, Paul J.S., he sent me this thing maybe a year ago, about that spacecraft that landed in Washington, D.C. It was in a movie called The Day the Earth Stood Still, which was, I think, 1954 or 52, somewhere around there. It was a good movie, and there was a spacecraft, but they seemed to be in the skies and take pictures of them, and for some reason our cameras really can't grasp them too well. But there's technology there that we have here on Earth that we can't use. And But there really is that huge sphere out there near Saturn that moves around, that it's not really in the orbit of Saturn. It moves through the rings, it moves over here, moves over there. That fella JPL sent me a photograph of it with a telescope. We've sent spacecraft Cassini out there and the Voyager 1 and 2, and they've taken pictures of it. And I know two people personally. I know you, Michael, personally, and I knew Riley personally. And the two of you, I believe, were out there. Things Riley did just weren't humanly possible. And he was a big puzzle in himself. But he was... he had a spark of humanity that people didn't even have. Didn't really know how to use it, or he used it in his own way. But this is just a continuation of this event that I first heard about in 1994. And that object out near Saturn has been there a long time, and it's, I mean, if we never took a photograph of it, then okay, we don't have any kind of proof, as they say. But there are photographs of it. And that one photograph where they, what I call, pop their top, the whole top end just came off. Because they knew Cassini they're going to take our picture. Let's pop our top. And you called it the light bulb photograph. Oh, that light bulb? But it really is out there. So the technology really does exist. We just don't have a hold of it. It may be held in our patent office and secret to keep it from us, to keep us held down. But it would be just terrific if we were released and not held down anymore. But I think we need someone like Shaharon to give us some clues, like the Frondelink that you saw. How does this thing work? What, you want to see the engine? I want to see the engine. Mm-hmm. Well, show him the Frondelink. Maybe that's what he thinks the engine is. So it's this technology really is there. You can see it with a big telescope if you live up on some high mountain above the clouds with a huge telescope. It'd be nice if they would point these telescopes at that object, but oh no, they have a schedule to meet. When you'd go up on Haleakala, I'd say, oh, go in and talk to those guys and say, swing that telescope around and look at what's on the moon, or look for our experiments that we supposedly have left there. Mm-hmm. Well, there's a lot of treasures ahead for us, and we've had wonderful things like a wonderful car with nice seats and windows that go up and a windshield, because horse and buggies, they didn't have heating systems, they didn't have heat. And they couldn't travel very far. Mm-hmm. Now, I could travel into the city and back the same day because of the car.
The same day.
Yeah, the same day, where you couldn't take a horse from here to into New York City or Philadelphia and think you're coming back the same day. It would take you days to get there, a few days on horseback. And they had these taverns along the way. You stop and put your horse in the stable. Mm-hmm. What did the old people call the stable? Not the parking place, but the I can't think of it now. But they would So our technology is just comes along very slowly. But we have cameras that have taken pictures of these spacecraft. They just don't land like they do in that movie, The Day the Earth Stood Still.
Yeah.
But what I mean is they don't land in populated places like that.
I gotta go.
Okay.
So, yeah.
All right. Well, aloha, Michael. We'll talk again.
Okay, bye.
Have a good day tonight.
Yeah.
Okay, bye.